I try to map it out in, to establish a certain perspective on the matter. From the topics that interest me the most, I see like three perspectives on the trends we have in AI now. One trend is, what does this mean for individuals? And since I'm really passionate about the future of work and how people are productive and find meaning in what they do professionally, basically, how can I leverage these tools to make my work better, to automate the stuff that I don't really want to have as a repetitive task anyway, and be more creative and stuff around that. Then the second perspective would be like how organizations can benefit from it, right? To basically run better, compete better, and maybe bring some unique scenarios where this AI component is part of their offering that they are offering their customers, and build new products, new services, and so on. And the third perspective, working for one of the large software vendors basically, is how to think of this as a provider of these tools, right? So we, on the one hand side, of course, have Microsoft as software as a service provider. So of course, people typically know Microsoft as providing the Office suite of products, Outlook, and like the Word, Excel, PowerPoints, OneNote, and the like. Teams with a rather new addition to the suite, and how these applications can benefit from bringing AI into it. We'll go into a bit more detail in a second. But also Microsoft is a platform company. So we want to have other developers leveraging our tools where AI can be now plugged into to the suite of platform services to allow them to integrate these components as part of their applications that they are building and unleash their creativity. So this is like, in the words of our CEO, a bit like we build things for others to build things. So that's the platform approach here, which is really fascinating.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the new episode of Veo Executive Academy podcast, where we give you exclusive insights from some of the brightest leaders today, who all have one thing in common. They are or were students of our MBA programs. I'm Chedomir Pushica, your host, and it is my task to ask the right questions so that you can learn more about the person, their industry, their mindset, and how they manage to bring positive change to businesses and their communities.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the new episode of Veo Executive Academy podcast. Today, my pleasure here is to welcome our guest, Martin Miller, who's my colleague from the MBA cohort of 2020-2022. And he's actually one of the first people I met during the studies from a different class. And yeah, it's more than 2 years that we know each other. And I know that he's been very, very active on social media and also organizing things like dinners for our cohort, for our audience, for our students. Yeah, so Martin, welcome. This is a real pleasure to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me, Chedo.
You're welcome. And yeah, speaking about the posting on media and everything, I see that you're very much into tech and you're always talking about different things that are happening in this space, especially because Microsoft is doing some great things and you're actually a customer success account manager at Microsoft. So you're very much an insider in the company. So I would like to hear your thoughts about the current state of artificial intelligence and all the developments in the area.
Mm-hmm. Of course, as I said, like, thanks for having me here. This is a really fascinating topic right now with a lot of hype around it. So I'm really proud to work for Microsoft, who's leading this wave of innovation right now. But maybe I can start off with sharing a little bit of what my role is at Microsoft, because I'm not part of the AI department or like the engineering team. So this is my own thoughts right now. It's not officially approved company content. So I have access to the same information that you were seeing and people who are interested can see online. So I started at Microsoft 1.5 years ago in Vienna. So I'm part of the Microsoft Austria subsidiary and part of the team that is taking care of the enterprise customers. And if you think about the interaction of large organizations in Austria interacting with Microsoft, they are primarily, of course, interacting with roles that we consider like solution specialists. That they are listening to different departments inside organizations, what their biggest challenges are, and translate this into what is like the solution that Microsoft could help them with digitally to address this challenge and expect certain benefits of it. And my role as a customer success account manager is complementing these roles. And basically, if a customer has invested already in a couple of Microsoft technologies, I'm making sure that these benefits that they're expecting actually materialize. So to drive like the adoption, lead like the knowledge transfer that is required to operate the system, and basically like the project implementation work and all of the stuff that goes around it. So that's like really exciting. Kind of leading the customer to a way that the investments that they have taken in the technology actually pay off. And that's why it's called customer success and not only like support or consulting department. So that's like a really cool unit to work in. Pivoting to like the AI meta, since it's so highly in the news right now, maybe like taking a step back from what Microsoft is doing in the space and looking at it like as a trend and what is going on in the market and how I try to make sense of it personally. I try to map it out to establish a certain perspective on the matter. From the topics that interest me the most, I see like three perspectives on the trends we have in AI now. One trend is, what does this mean for individuals? And since I'm really passionate about the future of work and how people are productive and find meaning in what they do professionally, basically, how can I leverage these tools to make my work better, to automate the stuff that I don't really want to have as a repetitive task anyway, and be more creative and stuff around that. Then the second perspective would be like how organizations can benefit from it, right? To basically run better, compete better, and maybe bring some unique scenarios where this AI component is part of their offering that they are offering their customers, and build new products, new services, and so on. And the third perspective, working for one of the large software vendors basically, is how to think of this as a provider of these tools, right? So we, on the one hand side, of course, have Microsoft as software as a service provider. So, of course, people typically know Microsoft as providing the Office suite of products, Outlook, and like the Word, Excel, PowerPoints, OneNote, and the like. Teams with a rather new addition to the suite, and how these applications can benefit from bringing AI into it. We go into a bit more detail in a second. But also Microsoft is a platform company. So we want to have other developers leveraging our tools where AI can be now plugged into to the suite of platform services to allow them to integrate these components as part of their applications that they are building and unleash their creativity. So this is like, in the words of our CEO, a bit like we build things for others to build things. So that's the platform approach here, which is really fascinating.
Yeah. It is. And actually, before we came to the studio here, we were actually discussing a little bit over coffee. We were saying that you're practically what you just explained, that you want to create a platform to facilitate others to use the same technology and develop things. Practically, you show them how to do that by plugging in the OpenAI's ChatGPT into its product. And we saw last week that there was a presentation of the Copilot. So now I would like to ask you a little bit about Microsoft's AI strategy. Mm-hmm. If you could tell us something that we don't know, or your thoughts about where these things could go and when we can expect to see the true benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Copilot is like the perfect example here to illustrate how we basically like making sense of the companies that you just mentioned. OpenAI is one of our partners. So they basically built and trained the GPT, a large language model. So this is like the backend of their own ChatGPT, but also the backend now for the stuff that we built into Bing as our search engine that is able to create specific answers now. And it's also like the backend of Copilot, as we have seen the first demos a bit last week, basically. So, and Copilot should be like AI-based assistant that is sitting inside of these Office products that a lot of users use, like Outlook, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and the like, and basically invert the creation process in a way. So if you think about how you sit in front of a Word document right now, it's like an empty canvas. You start typing, you write your novel, you write something for the view, like your next script for the next podcast episode and the like. So it's basically starting off with an empty canvas. And the human being, the one creating the draft of something. And for the last couple of years, we always applied some smart assistants that correct your grammar, correct your spelling and the like. So it's human drafted and the machine corrected. And what Copilot is supposed to do is invert this paradigm to a degree, to say, to prompt to the Copilot, okay, I have a proposal that I created for a customer last week that is in this file, like a Word document file. And now I need to, because the customer wants to see me pitch our product or whatever's inside of that proposal, And I just want to convert this into like a PowerPoint presentation in the least amount of steps. And now you can do this with a simple prompt and say, okay, I point towards the proposal that I submitted to the customer last week and say, okay, please create a pitch deck based on that content, but for an audience that needs to receive the pitch line of a message and not like the legally and the fine print, basically. And it just reflows all of the text and creates a draft, of course, that needs thorough review. It needs to correspond to the storyline of the speaker and so on. But it even includes like the speaker notes and what is basically on the audio side of the presentation and complements it, of course, with what's on the typical slide. So inverting this creation paradigm is like really interesting to think about what comes from it. Yeah.
And you could see also on many different social platforms, particularly on LinkedIn, let's say, or Twitter, where people are actually very much engaged in this, and the community is now, like, at least of ChatGPT is like 100 million user base or maybe and growing probably. So all the creators are actually saying that this changed the way they work. It made them more productive and everything. And if you were watching also the ChatGPT 4,
moving at light speed here.
Yeah, I know. It's so fascinating that technology is moving at this light speed. Mm-hmm. And even the best programmers, coders, I heard this data, if you remember, 80% of their work is now done by the machine, but that doesn't mean they're being obsolete, they're just 80% more productive.
Yes.
So all the creators now are actually using and benefiting this technology very much. So tell us something now, let's segue into this story about ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. Tell me something about that and its integration in Bing as well.
Yep.
You mentioned that Microsoft is now taking the advantage, like the first mover advantage practically into all of these technologies.
Totally, yes.
How is it changing the way people search?
Mm-hmm. So for most of the people, Google is their primary search engine. So I think they have 95% of the share of the search market, basically. But if you look what innovation was happening in that space over the last 10 years, it doesn't look significantly different now than it did 10 years ago. So it's basically you have, of course, a search prompt and you get a selection of links where based on like the business model that search engines, and this is true for Bing as it is for Google, they're incentivized to present you with like a choice of websites that you can jump off to and make the business behind these links that are running these websites pay to be higher ranked on the specific page. So if you are looking for like a hotel in Venice, of course, businesses would like to advertise and therefore pay Google or Bing in that case to be listed higher on that page and be found before their competitors are, right? This is how search engines work basically. But what we have found is that for many use cases or for like even more complex queries, presenting a user just like with a choice of websites and just say, okay, there it is, you go and hunt from here for the right information, it's not what the user is looking for. They are looking for like a crafted answer based on the query that they are putting in. And the example that I'm coming back to, where this is a really interesting example if you would execute it in a traditional search engine versus what Bing or ChatGPT is allowing us to do, if you have a complex filtering query. So in my mind, it was like, let's say you plan a vacation, basically, and have a certain criteria on how to select the destination. So if you think about how you would execute a query like this on Google, saying, okay, I'm looking for a vacation destination with a beach. It should have, in April, at least 50 degrees Celsius. It should be a city with at least like 500,000 people so that you can go out and party and have like enough options. It should offer direct flights from Vienna and should be like less than 300 kilometers away. So in a traditional search engine, you need to look up Wikipedia for the climate data. You need to look up airline websites to figure out, okay, what is like the direct flights and what is the distance? And then you need a different website for the population and stuff like that. It's just like, that's hours of work in theory to craft a list of 10 cities. And that's a simple query in Bing or ChatGPT. You just string all of these filters together and it just prompts you like 10 cities with all of the reference data. It's just, that's such a time saver. It's no longer just like searching for a list of websites to hunt for your information. It's rather actually getting to the answer a lot quicker. Yeah.
It is a personal assistant. And
And
now we come to the question that we also discussed a little bit before this. Is this personal assistant, for example, booking airline tickets?
Yes.
Sometimes you spend a lot of time looking for various options and everything. Now you have everything fixed by Bing, or ChatGPT or whatever mm-hmm. technology yeah. will be using this large language model. So it comes naturally. The next question is, I see some professions disappearing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this, of course, as always, creates a lot of tension mm-hmm. and people are worried. And if you were asking this ChatGPT or Bing, what are the professions at risk, you would mm-hmm. get a list of a very long list of yeah, professions. Yeah. And now, would you say something to that and also a little bit about Microsoft's layoffs that happened some time ago? Mm-hmm. And what's your prediction when it comes to this?
Yeah. So let's separate these topics a bit, because I don't think one is like directly related to the other. So of course, technology revolutions lead for, especially if it's along the lines of like automating certain things, right? Some tasks that traditionally humans executed might not involve that much human labor going forward. I think that's fair to say. I see it more along the lines that, especially when we are talking about like the Copilot that we've just introduced a bit or like shown to the public, I think a core competency of knowledge worker going forward is how to make best use of this technology, to really see it as a co-creation process so that the AI is taking care of the heavy lifting. So who wants to always like copy and paste text from a proposal to a PowerPoint presentation? So just to reiterate that example, there's like no actual value created there. The value comes on a different level that still involves the human. I mean, the customer that receives that pitch presentation expects a human to answer the questions and so on, right? That's still the case. So it's rather thinking about how to upskill people in a sense that, okay, like, how can I make best use of it? And a good example for this is actually the kind of Copilot functionality we also showed for Power Platform. So it's for the Office Suite, to quickly round that up, it's basically for the traditional knowledge worker working in like word processing, creating like tables and analyzing facts and figures and the like. What we are trying to do with Power Platform, as even before we introduced AI to it, was to automate certain workflows and to allow non-developers to build apps. Because if you consider like the market data around it, we can't produce professional developers fast enough. That's like the short story. It's just the demand that the world has globally for digital solutions to all sorts of problems far exceeds what we can produce and educate, let's say, produce in regards to like professional developers. So the matter is how to close that gap, right? Because we can't really get the demand down, so we need to get the supply side up. And one thing that Microsoft invested or built up years ago is tools we call low-code, no-code. So it's basically allowing traditional knowledge workers, so people who are like rather familiar with Excel or PowerPoint, to just start building apps or automating workflows. So the canvas right now, if you would think about how Power Apps work, it would look really similar to how like PowerPoint as an application would look. But of course, the canvas that you are seeing will become the front end of your application. You place a button and you then tell the button what to do and so on. So it involves some degree of understanding of how to build logic into whatever the user is clicking and what the field should select and so on. With the new AI tools complementing that, it's even less knowledge that you need in order to build an application. So the barrier becomes even lower. So basically any user who can tell the system, okay, I want to have an automatic notification every time one of our sales orders for the accounts with some criteria exceeds X, then please ping the entire sales team, and it just builds that automation flow automatically for you. So this is, I think, a real game changer on that front as well. Yeah.
That brings me to my next question, and it's very much related to the future of work mm-hmm. and new jobs being created. What do you think then would be the competency that mm-hmm. people should be developing right now? Because you say, okay, no more developer skills needed to that degree, no more this, no more that. Mm-hmm. Do you see where we should actually direct our focus mm-hmm. now and bring more people into changing their mm-hmm. paradigm of thinking?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as like no professional developers are needed anymore in the future. It's just for simpler applications, this can be done in a low-code, no-code environment pretty well. But there's still like a big market for professional developers, because of course more sophisticated needs need more sophisticated software architectures and real developer skills to actually even execute the coding, even though we of course have a co-pilot for this too, right? That assists you in writing code and correcting it and so on. I can apply like some of like how I do it for myself, right? I mean, I'm a really curious person and I'm like a tech optimist. So whenever there's something announced like we had it last week, I can't wait to get my hands on like an alpha or beta version of it to see, okay, how can I use this? And how can I explain other people's of how they can benefit from it. I initially roughly outlined like what my role is right now, but if you would like to see a pattern in my career stages so far, this was always like the common denominator in a way, that I early discovered that I like to make sense of how technology can help me. And I would like to say I'm not as a bad communicator to other people of how it can help them. And this was always my role. I started early on at SAP, being like a curious person, being into tech, being into the newest products. I had a startup, some startup years in between, and now I'm working for Microsoft. And this rhythm I always kept. It's just like being on the forefront of what tech can do, adopting it for myself, and just like making sense of how I could use it, and explaining it to others in the best way I can. And I think the more people do that, yeah, then we are on a good track here.
So you said you experimented a little bit with all these technologies.
Yes.
And seeing how you can use it. Do you have any practical example that you would like to share?
Right now, since some of the stuff, especially that Microsoft is providing, is of course we showed it on video last week, so I can't wait to get my hands on the co-pilot scenarios. But I experimented a lot on the Bing side, like with the traveler example I mentioned, right? It's like to, especially contrasting it with the older way or like the traditional way of searching for information online, I really try to understand use cases where I think, okay, this is where it actually saves a lot of time. So this is where I should look towards these AI-generated content in a way, which still has its drawbacks in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And this maybe I can be a bit more detailed about. So ChatGPT has been launched to the public in November. So it's like really early days for all of it, right? I mean, we just have been introduced to GPT-4. There's even more multimedia ready. So it understands images, videos, and the like. But sticking to like the natural language that you can interact with. So to make it understand what your task is or what the prompt is, and having it respond with in sophisticated sounding answers to your specific query. So one of the first criticisms was, of course, it's not every time factually correct, which is true, right? So this is like stuff that is being worked on as well. But in a sense, I would like to contrast this with how we conceptualize the stuff that like Copilot is doing in Office. So in ChatGPT, like the large language model has two functions, basically. It's on the one hand side, how language works. So it's trained on large bodies of text, of course, mostly English language, but others as well, to make it aware of, okay, how an English language sentence is constructed, how to apply grammar rules, specifically how to choose certain words, depending on if you have a formal or informal communication style, like all these kind of things. So that's feature number one, in a sense, or like task number one for the large language model. And the second one is, of course, the information itself that it has been trained on. And as a user, I don't understand what the information is that it has been trained on. And in that sense, whatever its response back, I can't really influence where it's selecting these piece of information from, right? It can look it up in a wrong source or have to be trained in an incorrect information source, basically. And I wouldn't be able to tell, of course, I need to check the answer. So in contrast, how we do it on the Copilot side, it's of course, the prompt is happening from one of our Office applications. So let's say I'm writing something in Word and I want to accelerate my workflow and not start with an empty canvas. I would prompt it to look up another file. So I'm prompting it to look up a piece of information and pointing it into a direction where I'm saying this is a trusted source. So please refactor this piece of content into something else. So I'm telling it, okay, this is something I seem credible and this is information you should seem useful. Maybe one example would be summarizing meeting transcripts. So I would say, okay, yesterday I missed a meeting of 2 hours in the afternoon. Please give me like a 10-sentence summary of the meeting. So I would point towards that's the meeting, that's the transcript. And the large language model only applies this feature of how language works. So this, I think, is mitigating a bit of the factual incorrectness of the model.
So practically, we have Copilot, which is like an interface between the model, which is ChatGPT or 4, to understand a corpus which you trust, which is your whole Microsoft 365 environment, whatever it may be, the meetings, the notes, documents,
your files,
emails,
everything, down to what the certain user has access to. Because this is like, it's not only trained in a way on like the entire body of knowledge of a company, because there might be some sensitive information for within that company on one SharePoint drive or whatever that not all of the people working for the company have access to. So it's basically by grounding the model from the side of the user, it only reflects the information that the user has access to. And the large language model, in our sense, of course, like provided by GPT-4, is basically processing this then.
Perfect. So you just mentioned that you are an optimist, a tech optimist. What are the threats of this technology, if you can speak to that?
So it's bringing me back to a bit of the three perspectives I initially outlined. Because in that sense, these are all, I would consider, like the individuals, the companies, and the vendors, like good actors in the in an economy, let's say, right? So I'm a person, I want to have a solid profession, and I want to get a paycheck, and so on. So I'm not like stealing money from someone, I'm just applying for a job at the company, and so on. Or I'm a company who, of course, likes to service their customer with like certain product services and the like. So in that sense, I would more see these technologies as like, how can I leverage these capabilities and create value for an economy? But of course, not every actors in an economy are good actors, right? So we, of course, have certain scam artists and the like, or people who just like to get money and don't exchange a lot of value for it. And so this would be intentionally misusing this technology, right, to bad means in a way. And maybe we can even like differentiate between what is like intentional use and misuse that can lead to like negative consequences and unintentional use. So the example that I would like you to make here, because it's a bit like the social media platforms had it, right? So you had the misinformation that can spread throughout these platforms that of course had like an intended human actor that was producing this misinformation and wanted this negative impact, right? We saw this with like certain elections and the like. But there's also this unintended results, and that we are seeing like in teen depression and with the attention sucking that these algorithms basically do based on the business model of these social media platforms in a sense. So there, and this could be true for these AI technology as well, it's not intended to have negative consequences, but since we are not stepping in at the right moment, it just leads to it automatically. It's just like humans failing to rein it in a sense. So this is the differences. And one of the things, maybe like one example for when humans intend to misuse it, to think about like really trying to scam people for their money, right? One threat that comes to my mind is like a Black Mirror episode in a sense. So think about one of these models being trained on like your social media data and your family tree and the like, and your communication style, and being able to like imitate this in front of people that belong to your family, your relatives, and so on, basically saying, okay, Shadow has been kidnapped or is in trouble and so on, and try to like talk to your family as if it would be you, basically, right? And this done at scale, that those are like the scenarios that I think like, yeah, these capabilities that I see so positively in the sense of how individuals work or plan their vacations, in my example, or how companies can advance their competitiveness, or how vendors act in these circumstances. Yeah, of course, like these capabilities also may lead to like really bad scenarios on the other end.
So you would advocate for regulation?
I think we need to really be clear what are like the outcomes that we want and what are like the outcomes that we don't want, and then have a discussions around how do we avoid the latter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And regulations, of course, like one of the things.
That's one of the burning topics as well, I think, in this
area. Yeah.
So, Martin, some closing words about this really vast topic that we can talk on forever.
Yeah. We just discussed like the harms and everything. It's just in my heart, I'm still like a tech optimist and see the, not only the bright sky. I mean, I made the cases on both ends. It's just like, there are ways to address the threats, right? I mean, we just touched on a bit of what regulations or like how to approach this topic, but I also see like a lot of responsibility on the vendor specifically to go into like a red and blue team approach. So this is like a concept that is known in cybersecurity, where you have the blue team trying to protect a certain system landscape against threats. And you also fund an internal team, like your red team, to act as a bad actor and try to infiltrate the system and mess with the servers and the like. And the same I'm seeing applied here. So that companies like the big hyperscalers are also funding internal teams that are pretending to be bad actors and finding flaws in the systems and trying to like lead it to bad outcomes. Mm-hmm. In order to prepare for these circumstances and be prepared for it. There will, of course, be cases that these teams don't think about that needs to be addressed later. But what I think is really positive in the last couple of weeks is, especially if we think about like how Bing preview is going and so on, there have been like certain cases where the system was like misused in a way, or like was used beyond our intention how it should be used. And the reaction was really quick. So it's a learning process, but so far like the speed in which we address certain flaws in the system or unintended reactions, this I think I really take as like a positive from it. Yeah,
I love that we are actually ending this conversation on a positive note. And to all of our listeners, go out there, explore, and see how you can use these new technologies to improve your personal life, your businesses, or your organizations. Thank you so much, Martin. It was
a
real pleasure.
Thanks.
Until next time.
Hello again. Thank you for listening to this episode of VEU Executive Academy podcast, Know How to Inspire. Now, one more thing before you go. Please subscribe to our channel on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes, or check out our website at www.executiveacademy.at/podcast. That is executiveacademy.at/podcast. Last but not least, spread the word, because the more you share knowledge, the more inspiring it gets.